The Defense Department will close 15 sites in Europe over the next 2 years. The department expects the European infrastructure consolidation to save $500 million a year. Catherine Hammack is Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, and my guest on Pentagon Solutions today, and here to talk about this and other issues in her portfolio. Madam Secretary, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you for being here. My colleague Jared Serbu covered your hearing, as we discussed before we went on the air. You were before the House Appropriations Committee yesterday, and you were also before the Armed Services Committee, and you had a lot to say to them about the issues that we're going to talk about. What did you tell the committee when you went before them yesterday? Thanks for coming in.
Well, Francis, wonderful to see you, and I'll tell you, two hearings in one day made it a very interesting afternoon yesterday.
And long, I'm sure.
It was, and then we had freezing rain at the end, so it just really topped it off. But Francis, I got to tell you, the velocity of instability around the world has increased, and the Army is now operating on multiple continents simultaneously in ways that were unforeseen a year ago. And although we still believe that we can meet the primary missions of the Defense Strategic Guidance today, our ability to do so has become tenuous. The fiscal challenges that have been brought on by the Budget Control Act really strain our ability to bring into balance readiness, modernization, and end strength. So as demand for Army forces are growing, budget cuts are forcing us to reduce end strength and base support to dangerously low levels. So what we face is a mismatch between requirements and the resources available. So our 2016 budget, the Army is asking for a 26% increase from last year in military construction, family housing, and base closure activities. So some might think that's high, but if you look at it, in reality, it's a 33% reduction from 2014 and a 55% reduction from 2013. So it is still a very low budget in comparison to past years. So the challenge we really have is that as our force structure declines, we must right-size the supporting infrastructure. We have to achieve a balance between the cost of sustaining infrastructure and Army readiness, because degraded readiness makes it more difficult for us to provide for the common defense. What the sequestered budget, or the BCA, does is it increases the risk for sending insufficiently trained and under-equipped soldiers into harm's way. And that's not a risk our nation should accept. So, as you mentioned, we are asking for another round of base realignment and closure in 2017, authorization in 2016, with a proposal for Congress to vote on in 2017. Because really, without a BRAC and the realized cost savings that come from that, the only alternative is to make up for shortages in base funding by increasing risk in readiness. And one of the things we explained to Congress yesterday was that we conducted a facility capacity analysis based upon our 2013 audited real property and determined that the Army has excess facility capacity of 18% when we reach a force of 490,000. Which is where we're going to be by the end of this year. But the budget is driving us to shrink further. And as we shrink further, more excess capacity is created. And so we must size and shape our Army facilities for the force we support. Now, you mentioned earlier in your opening the European Infrastructure Consolidation Review. That addressed excess capacity in Europe. And for the Army, we're going to be making an investment of $363 million, which results in annual savings of $163 million. And that's less than a three-year payback. We think that's an appropriate stewardship of the funding and the facilities that this nation has entrusted with us. So what we're facing right now is critical decisions that will impact our capability and capacity for the next decade. And it's important we make the right decisions now. Without the savings from a BRAC round, the risk is that our installations will experience larger cuts than would otherwise occur.
I was struck at some of the discussion yesterday that revolved around the condition of some of the facilities because of the inability over the last several years to conduct upgrades and maintenance. Your counterpart at the Navy told the horrible sinkhole story about the airstrip in Florida. And I imagine all of the branches have maybe not quite that vivid of a story to tell, but certainly examples of where deferred maintenance has wound up costing you more money than it would have if you'd been able to keep up. But the number that I think jumped out at me yesterday under the Facility Condition Index, and Jared, I believe, attributes this to Secretary Conger from OSD, 24% of the overall inventory categorized as poor condition, and another 7% meets the criteria for a failing building. That's 31% of the facilities at the low end of the condition continuum. Do you have a sense that that message is resonating with Congress, both in the hearing environment you were in yesterday and behind the scenes as you communicate with the members and their staffs?
I think it surprises some of them. And the numbers you just quoted are the Army's numbers. I'm not sure what they are for the other services.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, because we took such deep cuts due to sequestration in fiscal year 13 and in fiscal year 14, right now, the Army faces a $3 billion backlog in sustainment activities, and that is about 5,500 major work orders. So we know there's work that needs to be done to sustain facilities. If we don't sustain them, you fall into the next category of restoration and modernization. Restoration and modernization costs, and the backlog in that category, have increased 9.3%. So we've seen facilities slip into that category. And if we don't have the funding to catch up with projects in restoration and modernization, they slip into the failing category where your only choice is replacement.
Mm-hmm. You've made sustainability kind of a hallmark of your tenure in this office. I reviewed before you came in the latest sustainability report. What are the key items in there that people should know about for how you want to prevent that chain of events from happening, as you just described?
Well, there's many things we look at. One of them is our facility investment strategy. And our strategy is to try and focus on sustaining buildings so that we don't have to replace, so that we can live with our current building stock. We also are funding our demolition. So if something is failed and unoccupied, we want to take it down before it becomes a hazard to others. So our facility investment strategy is really based on operating our facilities the best way we can, consolidating into our best buildings, whereas we might have units that are scattered around in different buildings. As we shrink and get smaller, we're going to consolidate into our best building so that we can get after the failing ones and maybe take them down. But it is a challenge because everything is based upon funding. And so when the Army and the Department of Defense submitted our fiscal year 2016 budget, it is higher than the sequestered amount that was asked of us by Congress. For the Department of Defense, it's about $35 billion higher than the sequestered amount. For the Army, we are $6 billion of that 35. And we are asking Congress to give us relief from sequestration so that we can perform the many missions that the Army is being asked, or the entire Department of Defense is being asked to do.
What have you learned from the European infrastructure consolidation that would apply to that BRAC if you're able to get it?
One of the first steps in the European Infrastructure Consolidation Review was to prioritize our bases. And for the Army, we have 92 sites in Europe. So what we did is we looked at the military value. What is the highest use to the Army? Things that are going to be irreplaceable if we lost. And so we prioritized training areas. We prioritized training ranges. We prioritize some of our critical infrastructure in locations that are really important. We prioritize some of the air bases, because airstrips, it would be hard to build a new airstrip. some of the things that fell to the bottom were smaller things that were sort of leftovers, where there might be one or two buildings, where after World War II, we moved into a location because it was available at that time. And so we just kept on using it. This is giving us the ability to move out of those. Mm-hmm. There's some old radar sites, some old water treatment facilities. Some of these facilities that were costing us a lot to operate, but we were so focused on mission over the years, we didn't have either the time or energy to get after. And so this really identified those and had us put down on paper what the return on investment is. So for a fairly small amount of investment, the payback is a fairly short period. And some of these payback savings we're going to get earlier. Some will come later, sort of like a dominoes effect. Mm-hmm. If you close one location, there's still a small operating unit there. You have to move them to another location. But for them to move, someone else has to move out. And mm-hmm. you can see how it goes.
Yeah. Do you have a sense that a domestic round of BRAC, that you'd be able to bring it in that three-year window that you talked about with the European round?
Absolutely. And that's what we're talking about. And in our conversations with members of Congress, both before and after the hearing, we've talked about sitting down together and discussing what the next round of BRAC would look like, discussing what the legislation would look like in a collaborative effort, making sure that we have legislation and we have expectations that are clearly set on both sides. What the Army is looking for is an efficiency BRAC. And what is sort of the bad taste left in people's mind was BRAC 2005. Mm-hmm. And I've been working very hard to explain that BRAC 2005 was really two BRACs in one. One of the BRACs was a transformation BRAC. Bring units back from overseas, restation them in the United States. No cost savings associated with it, but really the right thing to do as we were sizing down out of Europe. The other portion was efficiency. So for the Army, the efficiency BRAC cost us about $2 billion and has annual savings around $600 million a year. That's about a three-year payback.
Yep, 3 to 4 year payback.
That's a pretty decent payback. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we did in BRAC 2005. So if you exclude transformation, we are not looking at transformation. Mm-hmm. We are not looking at bringing units back from overseas. We are not looking at those kind of transformational activities that we did in BRAC 2005. What we are looking at is getting rid of some of the smaller, more inefficient facilities.
The collaboration piece of that is interesting. That's where I want to come back, where I want to continue when we come back. My guest is Catherine Hammack. She is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we'll continue in a moment on Federal News Radio. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, Pentagon Solutions Today. And my guest is Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we'll pick up where we left off on BRAC, Madam Secretary. You indicated an interest in working with members of Congress, both parties, in a collaborative way to talk about another round of BRAC. I wonder what the reception has been like, because when you and I started to have these conversations 2-3 years ago now, and in other conversations I've had with other people at the Pentagon, all the branches, OSD, et cetera, for a long time I got a sense that the answer was just no, and the doors were slammed in your faces, and that was it. Do you have a sense that that's starting to change and that the members, some members at least, are a little more receptive to this concept?
I would tell you, in the meetings I've had, it seems to me like 75% or more of the members are receptive to a BRAC, because the conversations are, what would the next round of BRAC look like, mm-hmm. not do we need a BRAC? And so for the Army, we face an extremely difficult fiscal environment with cuts of $95 billion due to sequestration over a 10-year period. And so in order to meet those financial levels, we're going to have to reduce both our military population and our civilian population. So the potential of reduction over that time period is a 26% reduction in the size of the Army, from 570,000 to 420,000. We are doing that analysis right now, and in June, we're actually going to announce the next round of cuts for a force of 450,000. And so as we analyze that, we're going out to the communities and advising them that there may be cuts, they might be impacted by the next round of force structure arrangements. And some of them might see cuts as many as 15 or 16,000 soldiers and civilians. Mm-hmm. And for some bases, that could be half of their population. And as we go out and explain to them what we're taking a look at, the dire straits that we're in with sequestration that are forcing us to take these cuts, the communities are communicating with their members, and many of their members are at these sessions, that, you know what, BRAC might not be so bad. Because under BRAC, you could be a gainer. In other words, if there's a hole because we've changed force structure, you could gain in as a consolidate into. Mm-hmm. Or if the entire base closes, then under the authorities of BRAC, there are many opportunities for local reuse. There's planning grants, there's development grants, a local reuse authority, and the community get a say in how that's developed as a commercial office park or as an industrial site or even as parks. So there is more of a say, more of an opportunity for the community under BRAC than there would be if the base and the surrounding neighborhoods turn into a ghost town.
So as I kind of track the arc of this, and I see more and more interest, or at least willingness to talk about it, I regard that as a positive sign. Do you and your colleagues at the Pentagon take it the same way, or are you still as frustrated as you've been in the past?
We see it as a positive sign because there's a willingness to talk about what the next round of BRAC would look like. Mm-hmm. And we completely agree it would be an efficiency BRAC. We are looking for how to reduce our costs so that we can operate more efficiently and size our force structure, our infrastructure, for the next 50 years. And if you look at our bases, many of our bases have leftover World War II legacies that we never have downsized or gotten rid of. And that was in support of an army of 8 million.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at an army of 450,000 or smaller. And we need to really size our infrastructure for that army today.
Well, we're just about out of time, and I would love to have you come back and continue this. I have a stack of about 30 things to cover, and we've gotten just an eensy-weensy bit into the stack. But as you're going out to these communities and they're saying, okay, this might not be as bad as it initially sounded, do you have a sense that that's coming back from the other direction to the members that you're talking to, that that might wind up being something that helps break the dam for you?
I agree, and I think they are doing that. I mean, the first thing, the community is saying, please don't shrink here.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure,
they're demonstrating the support that they have for the military. But the reality is we don't have the money to run the number of bases that we have. So if Congress is asking us to reduce the size of our force and reduce the size of our expenditures, we have to reduce the number of bases we have.